Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Undriven on Joy 94.9 with your hosts Ash and Hugh, with Kafam on the controls tonight. On tonight's programme, we will chat to Jason, who is an ex-army officer. Jason joined the army when it was illegal to be in the forces if you were gay. Jason will take us through his life in the army, getting married, and eventually coming out to his fellow army officers. Once again, we have another great discussion coming up tonight here on Undriven. Stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. Welcome to Undriven on Joy 94.9 with your hosts Ash and Hugh, and we have Kafam on the controls. Hi Ash, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, how are you?
And we can't say hello to Kafam.
We can't say.
Is he on mic? Are you on mic, Kafam?
I'm on mic, I'm trying to concentrate, so don't distract me please. Just concentrate on your work.
Oh, he's cranky tonight, isn't he?
Time of the month.
As I said, welcome to Undriven, and our guest tonight is Jason. Welcome to Undriven, Jason.
Thanks, Hugh.
So, just to start with, just a little background of where you come from.
Okay, I'm originally from Melbourne. I spent my entire school career in Melbourne, and after I finished my high school years here, I joined the army, basically.
Okay.
And,
so, where about in Melbourne do you originally come from?
From the southeastern side, from Sandringham and Cheltenham area.
Right. So you're a good old Aussie boy.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, it's very seldom we have a good old Aussie boy on the show, isn't it?
It's probably first this year.
Yeah, you're the only Aussie sitting in here, you realise that, don't you?
Exactly.
You're pretty special for that. So you said southeast, so have you ever crossed the river? You know how they always say about Melbourne?
The north was pretty unknown to me, and also the west. I basically turned around when I got to the top of the Westgate Bridge, and I thought there was a roundabout there, so back to the southeast.
So, your mum and dad, and do you have any siblings?
Yes, I do. I've got a blended family. I've got four siblings on my side.
And I'm sorry about that.
Five step-siblings as well, so it's quite a large family.
Okay. So, now, you told me that your mum and dad actually divorced when you were quite young.
Yes, that's right, when I was about 8 years old.
Right. How did that affect you?
I think I was quite a resilient child, so I took it in my stride, I guess. I spent time with both my parents after that happened, and as far as I was concerned, I was just going to take advantage of that.
You're going from one house to the next.
That's
reaping
exactly
the benefits,
right.
Basically.
Yeah, and that can pay off when you're a child and you,
who was
you
your
get
main
extra
carer?
Things. My main carer was my mother.
Okay. Until?
Until I went to live with my stepmother and my father when I was 14.
Okay. Is there a reason you decided to do that?
Yes, that's my mother became ill
and wasn't
able to look after me, so I went to live with my stepmother and father.
Okay. How did that, because after being with your mother and then going to live with a stepmother, how did you take to that?
Well, you know, it meant a change of school and and the like. So I think, again, I did take that fairly much in my stride as well.
So you're quite a cool person, really.
Well, yeah, you might be able to describe it like that.
Yeah. And you said you had an extended family, so you had other brothers and sisters, or your stepbrothers and sisters.
That's right.
I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, and I was the youngest of all.
Okay. So the two families, you were the youngest
of the two families, yes. And there's 11 years between myself and my next youngest sibling.
Okay. So you're almost an only child, I suppose.
Essentially, you could call it that.
So what about schooling? I mean, what schools did you go to in the southeast?
I went to just your run-of-the-mill, ordinary, everyday state schools, Sandringham East, Cheltenham East Primary, and Cheltenham Secondary College, and then finally
there's probably
I went
a lot of people
school.
Sitting at home going, oh, I go there.
Oh, I went there, yeah.
Well, you can't go there anymore. My Murrumbina High School doesn't exist. It's now a housing estate. So
right, okay.
Yeah. How do you see any change from, obviously, years ago? What's a major change, you would say, in Melbourne?
In Melbourne, mm-hmm. Probably the amount of people that are living in the CBD now. Years ago, it was certainly not like that. And after business hours, it was quite dead in the city. But now, it's quite vibrant. And in fact, I live close to the city. I live in Docklands, so I love it.
Still haven't crossed the river.
That's right. Almost.
I'm in the west.
I'm in the west, though. Just. Yeah.
So. I mean, I'm pretty new to
to Melbourne, to Australia. I've only been here for coming on 18 years now. But,
18 years is a long time.
It's a long time, but it's not as long as what Jason's been here.
Yeah, definitely.
Growing up in Melbourne, and you just said it was a lot different, but compared with those, was there as many immigrants in Melbourne then?
Certainly for me there was, because I also went to school in an area very close to Oakley. I lived in Oakley.
Okay.
And Oakley was one of the centres of Greek population outside of Greece itself. So for me, it was certainly a multicultural
society. What about
the
Asian nationality?
Not so much for me, I must say, when I was at school.
Hmm.
But that's certainly one aspect that's changed.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you told me at school you wanted to be in the Air Force.
Originally, yes, I had that. Ambition that a lot of kids want. They want to be a pilot, and I thought the Air Force was the place. Unfortunately, I didn't have the correct eyesight, so they didn't let me in.
So you wouldn't get through the medical, basically?
No.
Okay. Yeah. This is On Driven with Ash and Hugh and our guest Jason.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Greg Walsh, A Busy Street, from the album A Busy Street. And if you'd like to know more about Greg, he's a good old Melbourne boy. So call Nick on 9699-2949, and he will give you his MySpace and his website address. And this is On Driven on Joy 94.9, and our guest tonight is Jason. Welcome back to Jason. How are you?
Thanks again. I'm good, thank you.
Good, good. Now, let's go back to what we were talking about before the break. We were talking about you weren't good enough for the Air Force, or your eyesight wasn't good enough for the Air Force.
That's right. So my thinking was I still wanted to be in the Defence Forces in some way, so I decided to switch to the Army, and I tried when I was in late high school. My first application was denied. I probably was a little too immature at that stage.
Okay. So at what age was this?
The first time I applied, I would have been 17.
Right.
Right.
So what age do they take them into the Army?
It depends on the entry category, but generally for officer entry into the Royal Military College, about 18 years of age is
right. So you were denied the first time?
Yeah.
Yes, I was.
So how many times did you actually apply?
After that, I went and joined the Army Reserves, and I actually got in there, so that probably gave me some confidence.
So
I learned a little bit more about the military. And I studied for a few years, studied building, and then I applied again. So I only applied twice to get into the regular Army, and the second time I managed to get in.
So you were pretty serious about joining Army. Like, how did you really have that interest to start with? Like, you know, it's like in childhood you have a phase, I want to be a pilot, I want to...
I think I was interested in the adventure that it offered. It was like a big family. It was a large organization that would take you in and look after you, and it was just different and exciting, and that was my initial interest. And I think I watched a lot of war movies as well, and military history.
Oh, that's all right.
So once you applied, you got in. At what age did you actually get into the Army?
I was 22 when I went to the Royal Military College in Canberra, which is a little older than most people when they go there. So that also probably gave me a little bit of an advantage because I wasn't traditional type of recruit, I suppose. Many people are going in, good sports people and built like rugby players, and that wasn't me. So
that wasn't you.
But you said you got in at 17, but then you joined in 22. So what happened in between?
No, I was initially interested. I initially applied when I was 17.
Yeah.
And I got knocked back. So.
Okay.
What did I do in between?
Yeah.
I studied building.
Building?
Building at RMIT here in Melbourne.
Okay.
Did
you work as well on the site?
Not so much on the site, but in the building office.
Okay. Yeah. It's still, like, I want to go back to the Army a few years.
That's right. Yeah,
that's pretty dedicated.
That told me that it was around about this start to think I'm a little bit different.
Yeah, around about that time or perhaps earlier.
Yeah. And we were different.
I was always interested in the same things that every other kid was interested in. So, wasn't mad keen about football and cricket and sport, and I didn't have as many girlfriends as everybody else did. And
being in the army, though, sport, was that not part of your training?
Interestingly, yeah, it is a very big part of it, but I was able to do sports that were not your mainstream sports. I did, when I was at the military college, luckily they had squash on the list of sports you could play. You didn't have to go out onto the Aussie rules field.
Right.
So I got through doing that. Right. And later I also did Nordic skiing and skiing as well, so when I was in the army.
You also had a girlfriend at this time as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Couple on and off for very short periods of time.
But you actually got married to one eventually, didn't
you? Yes. I did get married to that one. Yes. And we were all together a total of about 6 years and married for 3 years.
Okay.
And she was from the army as well?
She was actually in the Air Force. Mm. She was an Air Force doctor. So there was a lot of competing demands in terms of time, and we didn't always see a lot of each other.
You'd been in the army, and she was in the Air Force. I mean, who was posted overseas?
I never got posted overseas at all.
Okay.
I spent my career all around Australia, but I never got posted overseas, whereas my wife, being a doctor, was in demand. Her skills were in demand, and she served in Solomons and... in East Timor, and probably a lot of other places since then as well.
So you probably didn't see much of each other, did you?
No, there were periods of time, for 6 months that we
Was that good or bad? He's smiling.
I think it's... Yeah. Oh, no.
He's went all shy. He's not going to answer that question.
So is that when you ventured out that you were different? And
I was starting to, think about that, but I was completely loyal when I was with my wife. So
So when did your first sexual encounter occur?
Well, after I was divorced.
So that's probably 28.
No, it was early 30s.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. And that's when you discovered you were a gay.
Thank you, Kafam.
You weren't going to speak, Kafam. Sorry.
He did it for me. Thank you.
Yes, we just did it to annoy person because he doesn't like a gay.
A gay, yeah. Yes.
No, I think it's more that I started being gay at that stage.
So were you scared, with all these new feelings?
No, I was quite excited, actually.
Did your wife ever suspect that there was something wrong? Something different.
No, because when I told her, and she was someone that I told very early on, and we didn't separate because of that. We separated because of other reasons. So I later told her. And
how did she take it?
Well, surprisingly good. And at that time, I also was with my first boyfriend, so she asked about him, and she thought that everything was quite positive and optimistic for me. So,
if I can ask, how did your parents take this? When did you tell your parents?
It was a little after that, probably about a year or so, and not so well as my ex-wife did.
Because I suppose being in the army and being married, and they probably thought, the grandchildren are coming on the way.
Yes, they would have thought exactly that.
So they were probably bitterly disappointed.
Yeah, well, and then I also got out of the army after that too, so that was a disappointment as well.
Okay, so how long after the divorce did you come out of the army?
Another 3 years, I think it was, after that.
Okay.
So how was it in the army when, obviously you were in the army still after the divorce and you knew you were gay?
That's right, yeah. And I came out as well. So, that's quite interesting. That was, again, a positive experience.
Yeah, but obviously you didn't go, I was asking not to do with, you went and tell anyone, but just to start with, because in the army, you probably have, I don't know, was it a very open gay kind of a thing, or is it always put down?
Where I was posted, it was open, because I was posted to Sydney, and I was working in Oxford Street in Paddington.
Oh.
Not in the main strip, but a little further down the road in the barracks.
Okay, we'll come back to the story. This is Orange Ribbon with Ash, Kafam and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Ash, Kafam and Hugh and our guest Jason. Jason, let us tell us who the singer was.
Oh, that was Dusty Springfield, Hugh, and I Only Want to Be With You.
And tell us, why did you pick this song?
When we were chatting the other day, going back through my life, and I just recalled this one when I was looking through the playlist, and I recalled sitting in my family's car and this playing on the 8-track cassette player.
Okay, so it brings back memories.
And what's with Pump Up a Jam?
Well, I played that, again, I just saw it on the playlist, and there's someone out there that may be listening that might find that a bit funny, that song. So
okay, excellent. Now we've got a message here from Rick, and Rick's actually your flatmate, isn't he?
He is, yes. Indeed, yes.
And it's a very long message, so sorry Rick, I can't read it, it'll take up the rest of the show, but he basically says hello.
G'day Rick.
He's the only AGA listening today.
Stop it.
Let's go back to the story. Now you were talking
about the shower stories.
Shower.
Yes, we were chatting during the break.
No, that's all right. So after
I wasn't listening.
No. So after 3 years, you left army as well. After that,
that's right.
Yeah. So what did you do that? Like, was it anything to do with the?
No, it was nothing to do with coming out
or
the like. It was just a career move. I'd been in the army for 13 years. I'd learned a lot in that time and had a really good time. But I thought it was time to move on and go and do something in a different area and challenge myself in a different way, world.
Can I just jump back a stage? I mean, with the army, after you divorced, you moved to Sydney, didn't you?
I was actually in Sydney at the time.
Oh, you were in Sydney. Yeah. And you were in the barracks, which was in Oxford Street.
Yeah, Victoria Barracks, Sydney is in Oxford Street.
Must have been great for you just coming out.
No, wonderful, the whole Sydney city and area, and I was living in South Sydney, in Erskineville, next to Newtown. It's a good place to do that if you're going to pick it.
Did it make it easier for you?
Oh, most certainly, because there was also other openly gay army officers in the headquarters that I was working in, and in fact, some of them were more senior than me. So it meant that made it a lot easier.
So did you start coming out to a few people in the army as well? And
yeah, that's right.
How was the general perception and experience with that?
There was not any negative perception at all. The first person that I told was one of my best friends at the time, who was also in the army, and he was just shocked that, why hadn't I told him before?
Is it a general rule where you actually have to, make a niche first before you come up to anyone in the army? Does it feel safer that way?
I think, it's just like for anyone, you've got to pick the time and place, and there's always a good time to do it, I suppose. Well, never a good time, but a better time.
You did actually tell me, though, that one of your best friends to this day doesn't speak to you.
Actually, that's right. There was one negative experience. To this day, I still don't
And the surprising thing was his sister is a lesbian.
His sister was a lesbian, and he didn't accept her as well, although I think he does chat to her because she is his sister.
Right.
I haven't chatted to him for years.
Mm. Okay. So when you did come out, and, I mean, Ash, so you brushed over this as well, but you slowly told everyone that you were gay, or...?
Yeah, it was a slow process. It wasn't a big bang approach. You know, get everyone in a room and then make an announcement, so I didn't do it that way. But yeah. I basically, got on the phone, met people out, invited people to a barbecue at my place, and they realised that the guy that was doing the flower arranging and preparing the food was a little bit less than masculine. And that was my boyfriend at the time. So,
okay.
Kind of guessed.
So you just invited people and said, "Well, this is my boyfriend."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't say that, but
they assumed. Yeah. Okay.
So it was all arranged to be that way.
Yes, it was arranged. Yeah.
Like a subtle.
I remember that particular occasion. Yes, and so that caught up a lot of my work colleagues. So. Yeah.
So I'm really surprised that in the army there was no discrimination against being gay.
Certainly not for me, but then, I was a major and a more senior officer. Know that there isn't, I don't think there is a lot of discrimination for being gay in the army. And we, certainly lesbians have been in the army for a very long time. they do a very, very good job. And they've been accepted because they've done a good job. And they've been able to do a job alongside the guys. And that's why they're accepted. And it's the same for gay males. If they can do their job, they're accepted. They're part of the team. That seems to be the most important aspect of it.
Why would you say that? Because, I mean, being gay, I would think twice about joining the armed forces. What's the...
I wouldn't.
Sorry. It depends what reason you're going to join for Russia.
Okay.
But what would you say is the general pull for gay guys to go into the army, for example?
There's probably a lot of reasons, the reasons that I mentioned before for myself, but probably what Ash was alluding to. There's a large pool of young guys running around out there.
Matching clothes.
You live in very close proximity. You share showers. You share rooms. And I guess there is that degree of interest as well in the homoerotic side. Yeah. In a way.
I mean, I'm really, really surprised, you know, that to hear that, because if I were to come out in the army and I know that people come to know that I am gay, and then the shower experience would be quite different. Because they will know I might be looking at them and checking out.
I think
that's like being in a gym.
I think some army people are more like some sports people in a way. When the AFL players want to celebrate the end of the season, what do? They go and they dress up in women's clothing and they run around the city and they make themselves obvious and... That happened just recently. Yeah. So
does that happen in the army?
Well, it's that kind of outgoing type behaviour.
Yeah,
that
okay.
I want to be seen, so look at me, and I don't care.
It's a very jovial kind of a thing.
Yeah,
just
that's right.
For fun.
This is On Driven with Ash Kafam and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joy 94.9 with our guest tonight, Jason, and ex-Army Major Jock, and we are with Ash, Hugh and Kafam, and tonight we are with Jason talking about, you know, the showers in the Army.
No people talking about that.
I think Ash was trying to get to that, but we stopped him, didn't we?
We did. We thought.
No, you guys assumed what I was saying, but it's all right.
What were you saying, Ash?
I was just saying that, you know, if you had gay guys in the army, it would be all organized. That's what I was saying. Like, even if they killed someone, it'd be like all cleaned up. There'd be no blood anywhere, which is not.
Well, hopefully, if there were all gay people in the army, we wouldn't have the killing in the first place,
and that would be even better. Yeah, circuit party is big time.
Party instead of war. It's got to be good.
Yeah, that would be better, actually.
Talking about parties in the army brings me to lesbians against gays versus gays. How many people would you say is more lesbian or more gay?
I would say there's more lesbians in the army.
Right.
I think because it's more attractive for them than it is... talking, we're stereotyping here a little bit.
Of course.
Yeah, there would be more lesbians in there.
Do they mix with the gay guys and party?
No.
You know, that's the wrong question.
I don't think so. Not necessarily.
No, I'm just saying, like, oh, you're in the army. Do you guys mix up with other gay guys?
It's a normal question.
Yeah. Are some societies or clubs that are within the Defence Forces that cater for gay and lesbian people, but I wasn't involved in those, so I'm not too sure, really.
So there's actually a club just for gays and lesbians?
Well, there was. I mean, I haven't heard about it for a while, but I think it was called G-Force or something like that.
Ooh. Right.
Well, that might be the police
one. That's interesting. I never thought that would happen.
G-something.
Right.
So are you still associated with Army?
I am in that I'm an Army reservist, but I don't actively do anything. I'm just on the books, basically. So if the country's threatened, the government can call on my services without any paperwork, basically.
So what does it mean? You're on a reservist, reserve list.
That's exactly right.
So do you get paid to be on a reserve list?
If I did come and do any work for the Army, I would get paid, yes. But I haven't done that since 2003.
I see.
But I'll remain on the list in case they need me.
So tell me, if you get called up, say there was a war or something and you get called up to go to that overseas, do they have to let you go?
I think the law says that they do. If it was a call-up of reservists, then it's a pretty dire circumstance, and I don't see that happening. But it would only really be in the defence, active defence of the country itself. So the employer would have to...
When was the last time that reservists were called up?
During Vietnam.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And that was actually national service, so they didn't just call up reservists, they called up people off the street.
Right.
People from universities and people who work in radio stations or whatever. they took them and they made them into soldiers.
So are you saying
that was the law? This is for Vietnam?
This is during Vietnam, Vietnam War, 60s and 70s.
So are you saying they can actually get me against my will?
If you're an Australian citizen, absolutely.
That's against human rights, isn't it?
Oh, God.
Well, you could argue that the whole concept of war is against human
rights.
There'll
be a war under the show, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. But it's because you are capable of fighting for the children and for the women, so it's your duty as well. So it's not against
women fight
human
as
rights.
Well
yeah.
Now.
Huh? Sorry?
Women fight as well now.
Mm.
Not directly, you know, infantry combat, unarmed woman against woman or woman against man, but as fighter pilots and... in the front line, providing supplies, being engineers on the battlefield.
They're not just nurses anymore.
They're not just nurses anymore.
Were you involved in any fighting? Or?
No, I wasn't. No.
So you were always in Australia?
I was always in Australia. But at that time, the only overseas operational event that came up was the first Timor operation, and I was actually on long... leave without pay at that time I was travelling overseas, so I didn't get involved in that.
You know, the soldiers that we see in Iraq, for example, and Afghanistan at the moment, I mean, they don't, none of them look like they would be gay. Is it a chance that these normal soldiers are like the officers that you spoke about? I don't know how to say this without being rude.
There's a chance that the equal proportion that exists in the outside world would very likely exist there.
Mm.
So I would say that.
So you're saying 5-1?
Yeah. 5-1.
Like 5 straight people to 1 gay guy.
But you said that you were an officer and there was actually gay officers above you and beside you. But in the normal soldiers, you know, the ranks...
Even in the normal soldier ranks, they would be. And I have known of many soldiers that have been gay.
Okay. And are they as accepting?
From my experience and their stories and what they told me, yes. It has been just as accepting for them as well as for officers.
Yeah, I guess time has changed as well, because when did they get the rule off that gay guys can be enrolled?
I'm not sure exactly when that was. It was probably around 13 years ago.
See, that is a big acceptance in itself, I guess.
It is, and it's more than what, for example, the US has done,
definitely.
Where they have the don't ask, don't tell policy, but... It's more open here, and it's accepted, and it's much better if you're truthful, and I think they expect people to be truthful when they're operating in a team. They don't want people to be hiding anything about themselves.
Yeah. So are you saying if now someone is going to be enrolled, right, is this a question asked to them?
No, it's not asked.
Yeah.
But it's certainly...
It was asked.
It's not discouraging. It used to be. Yeah. When I joined, there was actual question... that was asked to you by the psychologist who was interviewing you. They asked if you were homosexual, and if you said yes, then you were taken no further in the selection process, and you were basically sent out the door.
But how many people would actually say yes?
None.
I guess
no. Absolutely none.
Just another question, Jason. In the forces or the army guys that I've seen, they're all Caucasian guys. Am I true in saying that, or...?
I think that's a true observation, Hugh. There is far more Caucasian people in the army, and we're slowly, this army is slowly being more representative of the wider population. But that is changing as the generations change as well.
Because, I mean, as long as you're a citizen of Australia, you can apply to be in the forces.
That's right, yeah.
But are you saying that it's mostly just Caucasian guys that
traditionally
apply?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that may be something to do with the experiences of migrant families in the past with the military in their particular country, which may not have been a positive
In fact, it may have discouraged them from having anything to do with the military. Mm. So they may have passed that on to their kids. And
also, the migrants majorly come down to have another lifestyle.
That's right. They're escaping from what, exactly. in some cases, is a military dictatorship. A completely different thing than we have. So I think as we get newer generations come through, then people from different backgrounds will be much more represented.
Okay, that's it's interesting because even on the television, when you see the normal soldiers, and as I mentioned earlier, in the different countries, they're all white, but you never see any.
Soon it'll start happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike in America, you've got all the different nationalities there.
Very different observation there. Absolutely.
Okay, well, we've come to the end of the show, unfortunately. So thank you very much, Jason, for coming in tonight.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Giving us your story. And unfortunately, Ash is leaving us for 3 months.
3 months, yeah. Parents are here, so I'll be doing stuff with them. So I'll see you guys after the break.
That's a long break that you're having.
Yeah.
And it's nice to
have... And Kafam is back. And Aline is going to be back soon. So.
Yes. And Aline's coming back, I think, in the next couple of weeks' time. So it'll be really good.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Orange Ribbon for another week. Our special thanks to Jason. Coming up next on Joy is the team from the Sports Lounge. Thanks for joining us on Orange Ribbon tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 p.m. next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thanks to Nick on reception for his help tonight. He's waving to us. Thank you. And from Ash, Kafam and myself, Hugh, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.